Natural Living with Gary Null, exploring the nature and politics of medicine, health, nutrition, and the environment. And now your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, and I'd like to welcome you to the program. Today, we'll be continuing with our ongoing discussion in an in-depth investigative reporting series on the effects of mercury fillings. We're calling this series Toxic Teeth. In this series, we're going to be talking about what we have to know in order to minimize our exposure to these toxins, and at the same time, what can we do if we have these toxic teeth? How can we get rid of them? The average person isn't aware that these teeth are toxic to begin with. They've been told by their dentist that the teeth are fine, that when this silver mercury filling goes in, there is nothing to fear. We're going to bring a challenge to these issues today. We're going to show you the other side of the problem. Today, in our final series on this, we're going to talk about some of the personal experiences that people have encountered. See if any of this may sound familiar to you, especially in light of the fact that many conditions such as multiple sclerosis, Parkinson's disease, Alzheimer's, dementia, kidney damage, liver failure could be due in no small part to the effects of mercury exposure. And the mercury, the most common form of mercury exposure, is from our teeth. And yet, some people eat swordfish or have environmental exposures that only exacerbate their condition. So they're actually compounding it. By almost every measure, the average American is taking in far more mercury than what the body can handle. That is not good. So let's take this journey and see where it takes us today. This is the background behind the case against Douglas J. Phillips, a Palm Beach dentist practicing amalgam-free, meaning mercury-free, biological dentistry. In October of 2000, the Florida Dental Board initiated an attack on Phillips and his practice. The board wanted him to practice according to only those techniques and treatments that are taught in dental schools and to stick to the standard of care recognized by the dental establishment. Dr. Phillips sees things differently. To his way of thinking, in an interview he said, "With me, what happens in your mouth affects your entire body, and radically so. That means that dentists must be aware of and trained in health medical issues or work directly with other health disciplines." Other areas of concern for Phillips include root canals, which often create an area of chronic infection that compromises the patient's immune system, and cavitations, holes in the gums and bones left from tooth removal that require special procedures for the removal of infected tissues before the wound can be closed. More generally, Phillips insists that the dental profession must start acting responsibly with regard to health issues and stop acting as a propagandist apologist for the amalgam manufacturers. Dr. Phillips often uses the concept of a paradigm in describing the difficulty traditionally trained dentists have seeing beyond the limitations of what they're taught in dental school. Your paradigm is the way you see the world in terms of perceiving, understanding, and interpreting. So what the person studies and what they learn in school, they really believe in their hearts to be true. So they can't imagine so off-the-wall sounding, so far outside of their paradigm, could be true. But it is true in his mind. And that's the problem. Traditional means are not helpful for these people with chronic illness and chronic pain. They have to search outside the traditional means to a non-traditional practitioner like himself, who has evolved outside those areas. Sorry, but we're having some background noise here, and there's some construction going on around the studio, so can't do anything to stop that. So please be patient with that background noise. He says it's time to let the government know that it's not the government's business to legislate health care. Let us have the freedom to evolve into areas that we know our patients are asking for. And then let us provide for the patients. And don't try to have all the health care the same, because where are those people going to go? To Phillips, the case is about doggedness and the and the dental establishment in persecuting open-minded dentists. He said there's no room for open-minded dentists today in dentistry. The Florida board's case against Phillips is a patchwork of ill-defined, unsupported allegations, innuendos, and claims on patients that were treated by Phillips, all based upon a single patient whose own testimony deemed too unreliable for inclusion in the court proceedings. One single patient was all it took to say that Phillips was doing unscientific practice. The board accuses Phillips of using an unproven diagnostic test. This refers to autonomic response testing, also called kinesiology, which Phillips uses to assess the condition of his patient's autonomic nervous system. Had this ill-informed dental board bothered to do their homework, they would have learned that this is a useful, informative, non-invasive form of testing used by health practitioners all over the world. They also accuse Phillips of using... Let me just one second here. Sorry. And Phillips used homeopathic antibiotics made in Germany. And guess what? They have been approved by the FDA. This gives you an idea of the quality of the case against Phillips. Quote, the state board in Florida is run by traditional people, and they think everybody should practice the same. They have what they call a standard of care. But I tell you what, if I work with the standard of care today, in 6 months the standard of care would be outdated, because in that time we will learn more than we know today. And we'll do better than we are doing now. I know from experience that it's going to expand, and thank God for that. They're trying to make an example out of me, he says, and they're trying to take my license away to scare other doctors from evolving into this area. They're scaring them and limiting their freedom of choice for treatment options that are safe. Also, what they're doing is limiting the public's choice in health care. Still, the Phillips case is no joke. Defending himself in court has cost the dentist considerable time and money, and the outcome is still unpredictable, although Phillips is confident of ultimate victory. Each case of this type puts pressure on all dentists to stick to the party line and to hesitate before trying anything new, even with patients who are suffering and can't be helped by traditional means. It's also a comfort to traditionally oriented dentists who see innovators like Phillips as a threat. Indeed, the American Dental Association's relentless support of mercury sore fillings may come back to haunt it when the organization can no longer hold back the tide of evidence at its gate. Already, in late 1991, a large group of dentists filed a class action lawsuit against the ADA, charging the organization with fraud and negligence. Among other things, its promotion of amalgam as a safe material despite evidence to the contrary. The plaintiffs claim that their reliance on the American Dental Association's misrepresentations of the facts regarding amalgam's adverse effects has harmed the doctor-patient relationship and the public health. What's more, the public sector has been galvanized in recent years regarding the amalgam issue. Since 1988, a grassroots movement of dental amalgam mercury syndrome patient support groups has taken hold. And in 1 6-month period in 1991, more than 500 amalgam adverse reaction reports were filed with the FDA. Also in 1991, the first product liability lawsuit related to mercury poisoning was filed against a dental amalgam maker in Tennessee. In the coming years, then, the patients who are harmed by mercury amalgam may begin to bring lawsuits against the dentist who placed toxic substances in their mouths without the patient's knowledge or informed consent, and those who purposely concealed facts about the filling's content. It's no great stretch, after all, to question whether the ADA has covered up information about amalgam's dangers. As one dentist told me, there is no logical reason for the ADA's refusal to recognize amalgam as a problem. At this point, thousands of patients have responded favorably to its removal. There has been an active effort to keep the information from getting out, says one. One dentist, who used to spend a great deal of time lecturing to dental associations on the topic of dental mercury, told me that the engagements came to a screeching halt. He said, I used to lecture 100 days a year to dental groups all over the United States, about mercury. And all of a sudden, I was told that if I were on a dental program, there'd be no postgraduate credit given for that program. And there's never been an invitation since. Approximately 18 months of bookings were simply canceled in 1 week. Why? Well, the dental associations began to realize if dentists start taking information seriously and start stopping putting mercury in the mouths of people, or start to take the mercury out of the mouths of people, then that's going to get out, and you can't stop that then. Dr. Sam Ziff, an author and researcher who has studied this topic for years, believes that a political power play is at work, with the issue of legal liability lurking in the background. He says, I think that what they're really hoping for is that this problem will just slowly fade away as more and more of the alternative materials are used and the use of amalgam is stopped. He points to a similar situation that took place in Sweden several years ago. A special commission declared amalgam to be an unsuitable dental filling, but the medical and dental establishment applied political pressure until the commission recanted its statement publicly. When scientists took the commission to task on national television, says Ziff, the Swedish Social Welfare and Health Administration made a historic about-face and supported the original statement against the use of amalgam. As this case illustrates, there's a lot of political pressure being brought to bear. They've been using it for 150 years, and nobody likes to admit that they've been wrong for 150 years. That's exactly what the Swedish agency did, however, when it declared amalgam to be, quote, an unsuitable and toxic dental filling material which shall be discontinued as soon as suitable replacement materials are produced, unquote. According to a Swedish newspaper, an official said, quote, we now realize that we have made a mistake. This is caused by people. This has caused people to suffer unnecessarily, unquote. Now, here's a question I have for you. Some of the finest scholarly, real authentic science is done in Sweden. In fact, the Karolinska Institute, they select the Nobel Prize winners. How is it that the official scientific bodies in Sweden could find mercury toxic, unsuitable as a dental material, and discontinue to use, and yet we cannot find any of that material here in the United States to be applied the same way? So then you realize it's not about science. It's not about public health. It's not about protecting men, women, and children. No. It's about not being found liable, not wanting the responsibility of admitting you were wrong. Too many egos, too much self-interest, and too many lawsuits would follow. In 1991, Sweden announced that the use of amalgam will be banned. In 1998, the Swedish government decided to stop the reimbursement by the Social Security Services of the use of amalgams as fillings, which affect from 1999. A total ban is happening this year. All of Sweden is banning all mercury fillings this year. And in early 1992, Germany's Department of Health followed suit by prohibiting the sale of, quote, conventional gamma-2 amalgam. The agency maintained that non-gamma-2 amalgams are safer than the banned variety, a position the Environmental Dental Association questions. Much like the American Dental Association, the German Dental Association had claimed all along that mercury cannot escape from amalgams. This position, of course, was in direct contrast to the actual legitimate scientific evidence that showed that it did escape from the dental fillings. In 1997, a consensus was reached in Germany for a case-by-case approach leading to an official contraindication of the use of amalgams in children of less than 6 years of age. Pregnant or breastfeeding women and patients with kidney problems simply would not get amalgam fillings. Scientific objectivity and public outcry over the dangers of amalgam do not always win the day, however. In 1995, Health Canada, Canada's national health agency, assigned G. Mark Richardson, one of its own risk assessment specialists, to perform a risk assessment study of dental amalgam. After a rigorous study of the available evidence, Richardson recommended, quote, a tolerable daily intake of 0.014 micrograms of mercury per kilogram of body weight per day. In order to keep individual mercury exposure below that, the report prescribed certain limitations on amalgam filling implantation. One filling in toddlers or children, three fillings in teens, and four in adults and seniors. despite the fact that Richardson's report was accepted and fully accredited by Health Canada, it, quote, created intense opposition from the Canadian Dental Association, which convened a, quote, panel of experts to review it. According to Dr. Roman Lone, president of the Australian Society of Oral Medicine and Toxicology, which is a non-profit professional organization of dentists and doctors created to promote concepts of biocompatible dentistry, which are supported by scientific peer-reviewed research, quote, the panel report was compiled by Dr. Derek Jones, a professor in the faculty of dentistry at Dalhousie University in Canada. Unsurprisingly, the panel disagreed with Richardson's research. To determine the validity of the panel's expertise, an assessment was made of each panel member's research activity in their published works. Significantly, not one of the members had published any articles employing risk assessment protocols similar to that used in the Health Canada report. A summary of the panel's expertise clearly demonstrates, based on their areas of academic expertise and published research, a severe lack of credibility, as well as an obvious bias towards the pro-amalgam position. Another assessment was carried out on the expertise and academic credibility of Canada's dental schools. This report, which has not been contradicted by any of the dental schools, revealed a decided lack of expertise in the school's abilities to assess and comment on this issue, unquote. Now, what does that mean in lay language? What that means is this, that what happens if you have more than four cavities? Then you're suddenly toxic. That four cavities is okay, but five is not? What happens if a person has cancer, or any form of immune disease, or arthritis, or heart disease, or scleroderma, or fibromyalgia? Then maybe one cavity would be too much. The entire report was so lacking in credibility. So what do? They get a group of people who've never had expertise in any other way except pro-amalgams, who are all pro-amalgam apologists, and they all get together like most expert panels and say, ah, we support it. Well, then another group who has nothing to do with that comes up and looks at the evidence and background of the people who are saying it's okay and finds that they lack credibility. Too bad that's not done in this country. Let's take a look at some of those common questions that people have written me concerning the program up to this point. It's kind of interesting that many people have read the report all over the world that's up on my webpage, GaryNall.com, with all of its citations, and I have a lot of responses from Canada and around the world, and let me address some of those right now. Question, who's responsible for the safety of medical devices and dental materials? Well, in Canada, medical devices and materials require approval of the Health Protection Branch of Health Canada. Not all devices and materials require approval by the Health Protection Branch. Only those listed in the table in Part 5 of the Medical Devices Regulation must obtain approval before they may be sold. Dental filling materials are specifically exempted from this requirement. That was someone from Alberta. Question, is dental amalgam approved for use in Canada? Yes, it is. Dental amalgam, silver fillings, is approved for use in Canada by Health Protection Branch. And this, by the way, that's what people believed. In point of fact, that statement is categorically false. Dental amalgam has never undergone pre-market review in Canada because it was in use before the medical device regulations were established. The Canadian Dental Association previously published this misinformation in a paper in the Canadian Dental Association Journal of May 1995. At that time, I informed the Canadian Dental Association of this error, but the Canadian Dental Association has repeated it ever since. Scientific literature on the topic as a whole supports the position that amounts released are generally less than mercury picked up from natural sources. That is what they're told. Okay? Not true. This is totally misleading and an oversimplification. The World Health Organization states that dental amalgam is the largest single source of mercury exposure for persons not occupationally exposed. Environmental health criteria in the International Program on Chemical Safety in Geneva has shown that. Now, here's a common one. Let's say that you wrote to your dental association. You say, or you ask your dentist, is the mercury which is released from my fillings, is that absorbing into my body? I was listening to Gary Nall, and he said it was. They're going to say, Yes, but in such extremely small amounts, in millionths of a gram, that would be 0.00001 grams. Nothing. Nonsense. Don't let these alarmists scare you. That's what they would say. The answer, the real answer, is rather different. Their answer is condescending and insulting to the intelligence of listeners. By emphasizing only how small a microgram is, it implies that a microgram of toxic material cannot be harmful. What is significant is not how many zeros there are in a microgram, but how many micrograms of mercury are released from amalgam compared to the number of micrograms required to cause illness. The fact is that a level of only 100 millionths of a gram, that's 0.001 grams of mercury per gram of creatinine in urine, is considered to indicate clinical mercury poisoning. So you see where they're going to say that all those zeros mean nothing. The scientific literature says all those zeros mean you're poisoned. Now you'll go to the American Dental Association and you'll say, some researchers claim to detect higher mercury in the blood of people with amalgams than those without amalgams, but other researchers could not detect mercury in the blood of patients, even with new amalgam restorations. So you really don't have anything to worry about. Go ahead and have mercury put in. It's not going to mean anything. It's not going to be in your blood. Look how many people we haven't found it in their blood. Well, how would I respond to that? Now, here's how I would look at that. There are many reliable studies, one of them from a Dr. Anders Berglund, which showed higher levels of mercury in blood and urine of people with amalgam fillings than in these without. There are also studies which show a strong correlation between the number of amalgam surfaces and mercury levels in the brain and kidney. And these studies are discussed in the 1993 U.S. Department of Health and Human Services report entitled Dental Amalgam, a Scientific Review and Recommended Public Service Health Strategy for Research, Regulation, and Education, Appendix 3, page 10. So you see, if you didn't find mercury in the blood, how about in the tissue? It's in the tissue. Here would be a common question. Is the dental profession suppressing information on the dangers of mercury? The dentist, the association, the FDA, absolutely not. The dental profession believes in uniform patient consent and recognizes the patient's interest above any other consideration. My answer to that, you're in a better position than we are to determine the degree to which this statement is correct. The American Dental Association, the Canadian Dental Association policy states that dentists want patients to be aware of conclusions from the range of scientific studies on dental amalgams so that the appropriate choice can be made. This statement is difficult to reconcile with their sweeping dismissal of research, such as the ones I've been discussing in the last three programs, that link mercury with a large number of diseases, and in normal amounts in a people's mouth is enough to cause these diseases. Dr. Lone derides the American Dental Association for the same tactics that's used in Canada or Germany. He says, quote, the significance of this is that dentists almost universally accept that what they are told by their associations is accurate. Combined with very selective reporting by the associations of the relevant literature, the end result is that the dentists are particularly ignorant about even the existence of research which does not support the orthodox view. This also leaves them predisposed to dismiss alternative viewpoints with contempt and unwilling to even consider the possibility that there could be problems. The difficulties, from a medical, dental, and financial, emotional point of view, which this creates for those patients who do have amalgam-related problems and who are seeking some help, are enormous. Quite simply, if you're sick and you believe that your sickness in any way has manifested from your mercury amalgams, your dentist, the dentist associations, and everyone else, no one is going to help you. You're going to be there alone because it's just not in anyone's interest to suggest, yes, by the way, the tremors of your multiple sclerosis, that could be costing you some serious problems. No one's going to say that. No one's going to say anything that in any way would jeopardize their position. It's not going to happen. And we have to be aware of this. We just have to wake up to this reality. And otherwise, you're just going to be very frustrated. So please keep in mind that there's a lot of politics behind all of these efforts. Now, let's... And by the way, the situation is similar in Europe. According to the findings of a colloquium organized by the Green Group in the European Parliament in January 1999, the official press release followed the event points to, quote, the tendency of the associations of doctor-dentists and their representatives in the ad hoc expert groups to, quote, relativize the toxicological and immunological impact of low doses of mercury. However, numerous studies presented at this colloquium confirm the concerns increasingly voiced. A not insignificant number of people are likely to suffer from the presence of silver fillings in their mouths, allergic reactions, problems of the central nervous system, disruption of the immune system, the hormone systems. Fetuses and young children are particularly at risk. Mercury crosses the placenta and accumulates in the organs of the child. The insidious chronic effects on the cells, membranes, and enzymes in the organism are difficult to quantify and necessitate recourse to test and specific analysis, in most instances neglected by official bodies. The problems of electrogalvanized provoked as a result of the presence of several metals in the mouth can be aggravating factors, unquote. Let's talk now about removing your mercury. Fortunately, the many problems created by amalgam respond to a simple solution. Remove them. Indeed, the symptoms that abate with the removal of amalgam parallel those created by its use. These include seizures, muscle tremors, chronic fatigue, memory loss, depression, headaches, menstrual disorders, joint pains, intestinal problems, and irregular heartbeat. All of these disorders and more have been cured by amalgam removal, and to date approximately 1,500 dentists in the United States advocate the removal of amalgam and replacement of the filling with alternative materials. A 1998 study of 12 patients undergoing amalgam removal at the Karolinska Institute found that 60 days after removal, mercury levels in blood, plasma, and urine had declined to 60% of pre-removal levels. Over time, mercury levels approached those of subjects without any history of amalgam fillings. A Swedish survey of 60 patients who had undergone replacement of dental amalgam found that 78% were either satisfied or very satisfied with the results of treatment, and 9.5% reported that they were disappointed. The reasons for undergoing treatment were many, ranging from a patient's desire to avoid potential health problems to the future treatment of serious current diseases. The most common complaints were problems with memory and concentration, muscle and joint pain, anxiety and insomnia, stomach, bowel, and bladder complaints, depression, food or chemical sensitivities, numbness or tingling, eye symptoms, and in descending order of frequency, the most distressing symptoms were headache, backache, fatigue, memory and concentration problems, and headache and backache responded best to removing mercury. But all symptoms showed considerable improvement on average. At the Huggins Diagnostic Center, 85% of patients who've had their amalgam removed respond positively. Over the years, Dr. Huggins has used several dozen tests to monitor the effects of removal. He says, a frightening observation is that we are able to find affirmative changes in all those tests after silver fillings are removed in the majority of patients observed, unquote. What follows are a few examples of disorders that improved following amalgam removal. Decreased white cell count. When amalgam is removed from three patients, their numbers of T lymphocyte white cells increased. According to a 1984 report by Dr. David Edelstein in the Journal of Prosthetic Dentistry, these cells, which combat invaders such as viruses and bacteria and parasites, decreased again when the amalgams were put back into the patient's mouth. Now, think of all the people with AIDS who have decreased T cells and have a mouthful of fillings. At the very least, they should be given the opportunity to have that reversed. Let's look at seizures. In his book, It's All in Your Head, Dr. Huggins tells us of an 11-year-old girl who was having seizures every 15 minutes, which prevented her from walking, standing, or talking. Neurologists had failed to diagnose or treat her problem. the girl had three fillings removed and her seizures stopped within 5 days. 2 years later, they still had not returned. Lupus, a 48-year-old woman with 38 amalgams, had suffered from lupus for a long time. She had vision disorders, gastrointestinal problems, skin rashes. The fillings were removed over a three-month period, and a follow-up examination 5 months later found her to be symptom-free. Multiple sclerosis. When a commercial pilot began to have trouble seeing and walking, he was diagnosed as having multiple sclerosis. His level of function began to decline until it became so poor that his pilot license was in jeopardy. At the Huggins Diagnostic Center, he had 15 amalgams removed. The man experienced rapid improvement in his vision, balance, and ability to walk. Today, he is still a fully competent pilot. But here's the interesting part. According to the American Dental Association's Code of Ethics, any dentist who removes a serviceable amalgam filling from a non-allergenic patient for the purpose of removing toxic substances, i.e. mercury, from the body is acting unethically. The American Dental Association's 1987 edict specifies that the treatment is improper when it is, quote, performed solely at the recommendation or suggestion of the dentist, unquote. In an accompanying statement, the American Dental Association said, quote, there is no scientifically documented evidence of a cure or improvement of a specific disease or malady due to removal of amalgam restorations from a non-allergenic patient, unquote. And while some dentists may have a, quote, good faith disagreement with the established scientific position on the issue, the statement said that belief does not justify the removal of amalgam given the lack of credible evidence. Of course, the American Dental Association has consistently held the position that those allergic to amalgam constitute less than 1% of the population, and there's absolutely no basis, none, not a scintilla of evidence to support their position. Also, isn't it time that dentists and patients begin to challenge this union for doctors, and a very corrupt one at that, in their ethics of deniability on the toxicity of mercury fillings? A lack of credible evidence, what are they talking about? Experts on the topic would beg to disagree. The Academy, for one, issued this response in mid-1990s to the American Dental Association's then-recent statement of confidence in amalgam. Quote, given the inconsistencies between the scientific facts and the American Dental Association's special report, the Academy has serious concerns regarding the American Dental Association's lack of scientific rigor and the tendency to misinform the dental profession and thereby the public at large regarding the established scientific facts about amalgam safety, unquote. We hereby call to task the American Dental Association for failure to adequately support their position on dental amalgam with hard scientific data. This failure has resulted in inadequate protection of the public and inadequate products, and the public is not being adequately served, and the ADA must be held responsible for the personal harm due to amalgam use, unquote. Likewise, researchers at the University of Calgary reached this conclusion following their 1989 study of amalgam. Quote, our findings are at variance with the anecdotal opinion of the dental profession, which claims that amalgam fillings are safe. Experimental evidence in support of amalgam safety is at best tenuous. From our results, we conclude that dental amalgam can be a major source of chronic mercury exposure, unquote. Today, the burden of proof regarding amalgam safety lies with those who defend its use, says Dr. Pesner. Its advocates must offer convincing support of their position, given the many studies that show a substantial danger in using mercury amalgams. Quote, only valid scientific evidence of safety could possibly justify the continuation of amalgam use in dental practice, unquote. He says, as the debate heats up, many scientists have questioned the continuing use of mercury amalgam or have called for an outright ban on its use. Quote, there is no safe level of mercury at all, unquote, says Dr. Jay Durek. Toxicity experts such as Thomas Clarkson of the University of Rochester Medical School and Dr. Lars Freiberg of the Karolinska Institute also argue against the notation of, quote, a safe level of mercury exposure. Other dentists, for their part, say the immune suppression caused by mercury exposure, quote, may well prove to be the most invasive disease of our time, unquote. Dr. Vimy has stated that the use of dental amalgam, quote, should be banned immediately, unquote. For a frontier society such as the United States, however, the challenge is to rise above our history of exploiting natural resources without regard for the long-term consequence. Much like the strip mines, harmful pesticides, and deforestation, mercury amalgams is a legacy to our pay-later society. But the days of indiscriminate use of our resources are long gone, and we must now establish a new ethic in the tune of a new reality. I'm Gary Nall, talking about Part 4, Toxic Teeth. I'm going to ask our engineer, at least in the tri-state area, to give out a number for people to call in for any responses. If you've been affected by mercury fillings and would like to share your story, if you've had experiences having removed your mercury fillings and would like to share that, we'll give you a number to call in on so that you can share your insight and input. No other questions on any other issues will be addressed at this time. I want to set time aside, about 15 to 18 minutes, for people to have a chance to respond to the series and the four-part series you've heard up to this point. Well, and I'm going to ask Michael, our engineer. Michael, what would be the number of people in New York could call in, please? And we'll get Michael's response here in a moment. And Michael, we just need you to give us that number, and then people can call in. So if someone can ask Michael to come to the studio and get on the line, we would appreciate it. While Michael's getting into the studio to give you that number and take your calls, let me give you some of the scientific references so that you can see that the opinions shared by me are based upon quality science and not just my own biases. I've kept my own particular point of view, my own opinion, in a neutral position. The opinions, the passions, and the challenges have been from the many, many scientists, dentists, and activists and patients that I have interviewed in preparation of this series. Now, at some point in the future when I have enough information to continue this, I will certainly do so. And I will get more information and pass it along to you. Let's go over now. And Michael, could you give me that number, please? Let's see what Michael has to say here. Still waiting for Michael G. If he could come to Master Control, we'd appreciate it. Michael, are you there? Yeah, don't hear him yet. Hopefully he'll be there shortly. Let me give you some of the final information here. Dentistry without mercury, BioProbe, one research. The mercury free and healthy, the dental amalgam issue from DAMS Inc. And National Institutes of Science and Law, Public Policies. Also from Executive Director Susan Hager of Citizens for Health, based in Boulder, Colorado, and report of the International Conference on Biocompatibility of Materials. Also the correlation of dental amalgam with mercury and brain tissue, the Journal of Prosthetic Dentistry. Now, again, all of these are on my webpage. I have over 200 of them. Just to give you an idea that there's a lot of science out there that people have not paid attention to, that they should be paying attention to, that can make a difference in the choices that you make. Let me just reiterate in the last 10 minutes. I don't think we're going to be able to get through to our engineer in studio. I'm hoping we can hear him if he finds his way back in. Just ask once again, do we have Michael G. on the line, or does anyone know where our engineer is at WBAI? Would he please return to the studio?
This is WBAI. Hi, this is Sydney Smith. Michael G. has left the studio for just a moment.
Okay, could you give us the number for people to call in, please?
In New York, it's 212-209-2900.
All right, 209-2900, that's area code 212. And please remember, this is only for people in the New York City area. We won't be able to take calls from around the United States today. So as calls come in, let us put them on the air, only dealing with issues or questions you have concerning mercury. Last evening at a class, I had two people come over, one who has had seizures for the better part of 5 years, and they happen on a regular basis. They are on several medications like Dilantin. There is no known cause for their seizures. In the last 6 months, their seizures have gone down to zero. They had taken out 9 mercury fillings. On the one hand, the apologists for the dental associations would say that's merely a coincidence, just one of the things that happen in life. My answer would be, why didn't it happen in the life of the person when they were under regular medical or dental care? Why is it it happens when they're trying something that is non-toxic and natural, replacing those fillings? The trouble is, it's almost like UFOs. If you have 25,000 sightings, you have to say not one of them is real. Because if you say one is real, you establish reality. And I think that's part of the fear that has occurred within the dental community. To suggest that, yes, dental fillings can place a body burden of toxicity which can affect the immune system, even that one statement would open you up to all the immune-related illnesses that people may say, well, maybe my immune system took a hit because I have 12 mercury fillings in my mouth. And then what's the consequence? So the dentist cannot do anything but continue to retreat and form a barricade. And either one of two things happens. Either Congress passes an indemnification law so they cannot be sued, but there must be some way of protecting the consumer interest so that the amalgams in their mouth can be safely taken out with a proper holistic protocol that those dentists must then learn how to do, so that the patient is not exposed to additional mercury, taking them out in an incorrect way. I believe that the dentist should not be sued. I believe that it is counterproductive, and that all we will get is an enormous amount of defiance. Instead, I believe that the dental association should come to grips with the fact that this is a major public health crisis that they have participated in, even more damaging than smoking, because not everyone smoked, but almost every American has dental fillings. The weight of evidence continues to mount, and all the while, people are going to be angry for the fact that, like DDT and so many other harmful things, they fought a war that continued to create exposure in people when they could have admitted it, stopped it, and got them out. So there will be a time when their options are very few, when the public will not have compassion or the legislatures to their predicament. So I would suggest that they come to the table now, stop defending an indefensible position, and start looking for constructive solutions to help people. We have about 12 minutes left. I would like to go to the phones and hear from people who have had issues with dental fillings. And our number is 212-209-2900. And let's see who we have on the phone now. What's your name, please?
Hi, my name is Judith.
Hi, Judith. Tell us your experience, please.
Well, I have quite a number of dental amalgams in my mouth, and I've been wanting to get them out for quite some time, but I'm having trouble finding the right dentist and the right material. How does one go about getting that information?
All right, there's a couple things you can do which can help you. One of the things you can do is there is a report on my webpage that shows you the holistic protocols. There are also a list of holistic dentists around the United States that can take you step for step through what is called the Huggins Program, and it's probably the best holistic model for dental removal because he was the one who really mastered it.
Mm-hmm. Now, do they have a list of dentists who practice that protocol?
Yes, they do.
In the area. Uh-huh. Okay.
All right. Thank you for your call. We'll take
Very
another
good.
Call.
Thank you.
Bye. Your call. What's your name, please?
Hello?
Hi.
My name is Sean.
Sean, are you on a regular phone?
No, I'm actually on a cell phone.
You're going to have to make it real quick, Sean, because it's not a good connection.
Right. Well, the problem that I have is that there are times where I have a metal taste. I have quite a few amalgams in my mouth where I have a metal taste within my mouth. And I don't know. It's just times where I have this during the year, throughout the course of the year. And I've always thought it was strange, but not having the information or knowing certain things to do, but I guess I'm at the process now where I need to actually remove them.
All right. Well, like a lot of people, Sean, you're not alone. The idea is that once you realize that you are having such things as a metal taste or headaches, fatigue for no apparent reason, then you should have a test done. And there are tests mercury compatibility test to determine the impact of that mercury upon your system. And now there are even diagnostic tests to tell exactly what part of your system is being adversely affected, whether it's your muscles or your joints or your immune system or your white blood cells or your brain. And again, there are a number of physicians, number of dentists, I should say, who are capable of doing this. And if you go to the same resources, you'll find the same list there to help you. Okay. And there's also the book by Dr. Huggins, It's All in Your Head, which is at your local library that can also help you as well. We'll take another call. Your turn, please. What's your name? You're on the air.
Hello?
Yes, speak right up, please.
Hello?
Yes, you're on the air.
This is Toyin from Long Island. I also have a metal taste in my mouth, and I wanted to know about the price range of getting the amalgams removed.
Each dentist charges a different price. You could be charged as little as $200 a filling, as high as $400 a filling.
Mm.
It takes more time to take out a mercury filling and to create compatible testing. They would test your immune system, test you to make sure you're not allergic to the components within the new compound going in, whether it's a porcelain inlay or one of the others that they're going to put in there. And they have a whole list of now, thank goodness, there's a lot of different things to choose from. For many years, the alternatives were very weak, and they'd frequently crack or wear down, so you'd have to get them replaced. Now there are newer ones on the market that have very low allergic activity, are hard and long-lasting, and your dentist would go over those with you. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be, generally speaking, it's about 15% more expensive than a regular filling because of the amount of time, effort, and testing that goes into it.
Yeah,
we'll take another call. I'm Gary Nall. Your turn. What's your name, please?
And I had, ever since I've had some amalgam fillings put in, I got in Bell's palsy, and my face is still seems to be affected, and that it's not 100% restored, and it affects the same side of the face where I had the filling put in. Is it possible the leaking of the mercury could affect the nerves and the
Speak up, please.
Is it possible that the mercury filling could be affecting the nerves in the side of my face, that the tooth was filled with the mercury amalgam?
Well, it depends. Generally, Bell's palsy is caused by a virus. And the best protocol is intravenous vitamin C, followed by intravenous ozone, followed by, or concomitant with, an antiviral herbal program, such as bitter melon juice and St. John's wort and echinacea, vitamin C, quercetin, that are known to have very strong antiviral properties. I have seen the reversal of Bell's palsy in as little as 10 days in a woman who came to see me who had full-blown Bell's palsy, and it completely was gone in 10 days. Normal time would have been at least a year. And by the way, she teaches nursing, and her daughter and son-in-law are both physicians. She was rather surprised by the turn of events. So there are protocols that can help with Bell's palsy.
Yes.
To the second question was, is it possible that it occurred in the same area of the mouth? I don't know. The speculation is that as long as anything is leaking into the lymphatic system, and you do have glands, you have sublingual glands, you have submaxillary glands, you have glands all along the bottom of your jaw. If you were to massage underneath your jaw towards your neck, you'd find these, anywhere from a large grape size down to a small pea size. And those are glands that will frequently take bacteria, debris, and drainage from the sinus cavities and the teeth and hold them so they can be released in the body. So you would have to have someone check you there. And at the very least, look for your option of having that removed.
Thank you.
We'll take another call. What's your name, please? Speak right up. You're on the air.
Oh, hi. My name is Diane. Hello?
Yes, Diane, you're on the air.
Thank you, sir. Okay, around 15 years or so ago, I saw this dentist. And at the time, I wanted to get my mercury fillings out. Almost every tooth in my mouth had them. And what he did, he just kind of drilled them out, and I wound up swallowing most of it. And I'm just wondering, would that have passed through me, or would that have absorbed into my body? And also, I'm curious about dental implants, you know, and what, you know, the metal in the jaw and all that. But I'm very interested in the first thing, in the first situation.
Okay, it is entirely possible.
I can't hear you, sir.
Okay. All right, listen on the radio, please.
Okay.
It's entirely possible that when any mercury is put into the mouth or comes out of the mouth, that there is vaporization. And anytime you're breathing, that is going to go into the lungs. Once in the lungs, the mercury ions and the methylmercury that's formed in the gut can pass the blood-brain barrier. It can go into any tissue in your body. That's its danger. You can't smell it. You generally can't taste it. In the mouth, because it's almost like having a battery in the mouth, you'll get a metallic taste. But outside of that, it can disrupt local muscle tissue. It can cause nerve damage anywhere in the body, more likely than not in the area closest to the mouth and teeth. Gum damage, facial nerve damage, brain damage, pituitary, submaxillary, the parotid and the pituitary, the pineal gland, all of those can be adversely affected and affect poison by the mercury. That's why there has been kind of a cavalier idea that, well, if it's safe once in the mouth, and I only have to be careful making the paste, and therefore it's a toxic substance when we're making the paste, as long as I'm, you know, not that indiscriminate when I'm dealing with it, I'm okay. Well, as I stated in my report with the scientific basis, dentists have the highest suicide rate of any profession, highest cause of premature death of any profession. They live 9 years less than the average professional. That's a big reduction. And in no small reason is because the mercury vapors, even under the best of conditions, are able to be inhaled or wafted around in the room. So you make a mercury paste up, and you put on a mask, and you put it in someone's mouth, and you take your mask off. What, do you think that room doesn't have mercury vapors in it? Of course it does. So you're breathing it in. We didn't believe secondhand smoke was dangerous. Now we know that secondhand smoke is extremely insidious. So I would say, entirely possible your issue. We'll take another call. I'm Gary Nall. You're on the air. What's your name, please?
Hi, good afternoon. This is Mary Lynn, and I actually had all my mercury taken out. I had a lot of work that was done in my life, dentistry, and at a certain point a few years ago, it all broke down. And I had seen some holistic practitioner, and not with testing, but his thought was that I had tremendous amount of galvanic response from the different kinds of metals I had from all the different crowns and things, and root canals, and the posts and the root canals. So what happened was I got together with Dr. Zionis and asked him to help me reconstruct my mouth, the four back areas. And the thing that I noticed the most, and the thing that I want to report to people today, is that my brain fog lifted. There was a certain level where my brain just wouldn't function as it had when I was younger. I wouldn't make certain kinds of connections. I couldn't get words out and things. And I found that the mercury was taken out in three different sessions, and as well as all the different crowns replaced with composites. And I found that each time I would have a large amount taken out, I would think a little bit better. And finally, by the third time, I felt like a weight was lifted from me. I never went back to the way my mind was working before. A lot clearer. I had a lot more ability to have memory. On top of it, I also noticed that any kind of candida responses I was having were very, very much diminished. I noticed that over now it's been about 2 years, and some of them are coming back, so it may be a different issue. And I also have a little bit of a sinus problem, so I think that I'm going to go back on listening to this program. I appreciate it, Gary. I think what I'm going to do is go back and redo my mercury protocol, because we did a protocol to do some cleansing and to also get me ready for it. And then afterwards, I continued to use homeopathics for nickel and mercury and different things that I tested myself for. But I will say one cautionary thing. especially in regards to the lady just before me. Because someone says they're holistic doesn't necessarily mean that they're meticulous about the things that they know. Sometimes they're in a rush. Sometimes, it may not be what they're necessarily about on a day-to-day basis. And it was really important for me to work with my practitioner to know what I needed to know beforehand, to read Hal Huggins' book, to be very precise in the kind of treatment I wanted, and continue to work with the doctor to make sure that I got it. And I found that by doing that, I felt very confident about the kind of results I got, and I'm actually very pleased with the work I did with Dr. Zinus and feel like it's made a difference, because with my immune system, it was going way, way down. And it's not great now, because I'm not doing everything that I might, but I will say that when I have a problem, it has a discrete time. It goes into an acute phase, and then it resolves, whereas before, things would just drag on forever. So I just want to thank you for the opportunity to say that it's made a big difference. And I do feel a lift in my body where I'm more like I had been when I was younger.
Well, I appreciate your input. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
We don't have time for any more calls. I thank the people who called in. And this is part four of our ongoing series. I don't have a number at this time for anyone to call if they want any copies of the program, but I would refer you to my webpage, GaryNall.com, under Issues, and all the important issues involving our health or environment are on that webpage as GaryNall.com. This is part four of Toxic Teeth, the debate around mercury fillings. Now, one thing that I did decide this week, because we've had probably 200 or 300 people who are calling and interested in this, I have asked someone to put together a dentist, holistic dentist, and a nutritionist to put together a program that would help people understand what's involved, what kind of protocols are necessary, and maybe over a period of a couple of nights, over a couple of weeks, to be able to share this with information. And for information on this, you'll contact the Metropolitan Wellness Group, and I'll give you a phone number, and it'll be probably about a week before you'll get a call back. But this is being done now just to provide a public service, a public forum for people who want to get their mercury out and want information on how to do it. 212-252-1942. 212-252-1942. Lastly, this Sunday evening, 8 o'clock, I'll be on WNEW 102.7 FM from 8 to 9. At 9 o'clock, 10:50 a.m. on the dial, WEVD, 2 hours. And of course, next Monday, not this Monday, Monday a week, the 21st at noon, major demonstration. I've had over 300 people from around the world who are coming in for this demonstration. Lots of psychiatrists, psychologists, lawyers, activists. Interesting. It's just picked up an enormous momentum because we're trying to change the laws to protect you so you have rights when you have a problem when it comes to mental issues. No more forced electroconvulsive therapy. Join us, 120 Broadway in Lower Manhattan, Monday, 21st of May at noon. Have a good weekend, everyone.